WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. Happy 25th to us. Our 25th anniversary celebration continues with our friends at Curio and Foreign Daughter with number 24 and 23 this week, and some old memories and good times. But tell you what, Sunday was right up there in 25 years of owning this place and almost 32 years of being on the air here to be a historian, to have been here when there were no Colts, to be here when the Orioles ruled the roost and the Ravens were the purple Barney guys back in 96 and 97. What a weekend. Luke Jones joins us now. He was watching from home. I was watching from home. I would have been in Cincinnati, but I was here. I was at the Kicks concert. I was at the games on Thursday and Friday. You can't do everything, right? And on Sunday, if you're married to the Orioles and have been married to the Orioles all year long, it's not weird as a Ravens fan to make it feel like, well, it's a game day Sunday. We're playing in Cincinnati. Division lead at stake here. Bunch of injuries. Joe Burrow, don't know what he's made of. And started with the football game and ended with the baseball game and the Kicks concert. But the football game, all Orioles aside, a momentous win, a monumental win to go on the road and to beat up on the Cincinnati Bengals and have them at 0-2 right now. What a start for the Ravens.
It really was. I mean, this was as impressive as we've seen the Ravens look, in my mind, in a couple years. I think for Lamar Jackson specifically, as good as he's looked since the first 3 weeks last season, where he got off to such a fast start. This offense got off to such a fast start. But I think for me, when you look at what's happened over the last couple years, so many different excuses, albeit legitimate ones, for why the Ravens have gone to Cincinnati and lost and had lost the last three times going into Sunday's game. All these injuries, and specifically over the previous three meetings, no Lamar Jackson. But to sit here and say that this was all about Lamar Jackson, as impressive as he was, I found this to be such a complete team effort, other than maybe the special teams and giving up a punt return for a touchdown. So I think it was just a very complete effort offensively. I mean, the offensive line was excellent. Lamar Jackson was so good in the quick game and getting the ball out. They ran the ball effectively. Other than some penalties, it was a clean performance in terms of not turning the ball over and self-inflicted mistakes and blown assignments and things of that nature. I mean, the offense just played so well. And defensively, I think especially, you know, in the first half, especially second half, even to the degree that they just gave Joe Burrow very little to work with in terms of big play opportunities. And they kept forcing him to check the ball down, and they tackled really well, which is what you need to do if you're going to force a quarterback to throw to the flats and throw underneath. They just did what they needed to do. And even as the Bengals got going, as the game went on, they still made it difficult for them. They made them convert third downs all the way down the field rather than 20, 25, 30-yard chunk plays, as we've seen the Bengals be capable of doing in the past with Burrow and Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and company.
And with a depleted secondary, that was
really,
a concern all
really
along.
Impressive, yeah. Performance. And to me, it's one of those performances where the Ravens like to say the sky's the limit, but it was the kind of performance where you say, all right, even with the injuries they had, they showed some significant upside in this football game. And I think it caused some people to maybe recalibrate their expectations for just how great this football team really can be.
I don't know about recalibrating the Ravens. I almost want to recalibrate the Bengals. And that being said, the Ravens are playing without some of their best players, right? So the thought that Linderbaum's coming back at some point, Stanley's coming back at some point, Humphrey's going to come back at some point. I'm not a believer in Williams or Dobbins. That's so far down the road that I can't see that right now. But comprised with what they are and watching a center that I couldn't even pronounce his name, my wife's like, who's the Mustafa guy? I'm like, everything's new here, right? McCary, who we're very familiar with playing on the left side, I thought they would struggle offensively. I thought that they, when you lose those kinds of cogs in the engine, and then Odell Beckham went down, that they would look different than they did. They looked like they didn't miss a beat to a large degree. And plus for the Ravens, but really an indictment for the Bengals. The Bengals did not look like a playoff team on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, and look, I mean, we'll get into that. I mean, I'm much more focused on how the Ravens played, which to me was a really complete football game. I mean, they they played without multiple starters, and I think you need to give them proper credit. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals completely, yeah, they were completely sleepwalking through the first six quarters of the season, and that's why they're 0-2 right now. And they started 0-2 last year, and Joe Burrow is dealing with the calf again, it sounds like. So yeah, they're definitely in trouble, and they're 0-2, 15 games to go. I think we all recognize that. You know, no one wins the Super Bowl in week two, although with injuries, you can do a lot to your chances, as we saw in week one for the Ravens. But I mean, it was just a very complete performance by the Ravens. I mean, again, other than the punt return for the touchdown, what can you really point to and be unhappy with? I mean, the defense gave up 17 points when you consider that seven of those points came on the return. So you'll take that against Joe Burrow and the Bengals any day of the week. And it's largely what they did last year. I mean, Mike McDonald's had a really good game plan against Joe Burrow in every meeting to this point. So for them to do that on the defensive side of the ball with no Marlon Humphrey, with no Marcus Williams on the back end, with Odafe Oweh playing very little, so that meant a bigger workload for Clowney and for Ajabo on the edges. I mean, they played really, really good football on both sides of the ball, and wasn't perfect, but boy, it was a lot better than I think even optimistic Ravens fans, recognizing the number of injuries they had. And as you pointed out, Beckham goes out as well, and they just didn't miss a beat. I mean, they were really good across the board on offense, and they were really good across the board on defense. And yeah, Cincinnati finally got going offensively in the second half, but as I pointed out, they still made them go the length of the field. They still had to convert. I mean, all those third downs that the Bengals did convert. And that's the one thing you can look at and say, okay, the third down defense, you'd like it to be better, but it's because they weren't allowing a whole lot on first and second down, and it kept putting the Bengals in third down situations that they had to convert. I mean, you're not going to shut teams out. Teams, offenses like that, you're not going to do that consistently in the NFL, even as a great defense. I mean, that's just a reality in 2023. It's not 2000 anymore. But for them to do what they did with some of the guys that were missing, with some of the questions that we have about this team, it's not as though they put a whole lot of pressure on Burrow over the course of the game. I mean, you know, they had what, one sack? I mean, you know, and that Clowney sack was a coverage sack, if you recall. So they made life very difficult for the Bengals. And to your point, to bring it back to what you said, it was a Cincinnati team that until the third quarter, until the fourth quarter, they haven't looked like they've been ready to play in 2023. And they better regroup quickly here because it's not going to get any easier for them as the schedule, you know, as the season goes on. They need to get themselves right. And if you're the Ravens, now 2-0, chance to move to 3-0 against Indianapolis. And I think, again, all the questions we had last week and how underwhelming the offense looked last week against the Houston Texans, albeit still a victory, they answered a lot of those questions on Sunday. And again, I couldn't have been more impressed with how Lamar Jackson and this offense operated, despite the many injuries that they were dealing with.
Luke, you mentioned in the offense, and we had spent so much time in the offseason. I mean, we spend months talking about these things, and the games happen in a blink in 3 hours on Sunday, and then all of a sudden you're quarter of the way through the season 2 weeks from now, all of a sudden, right? Like it's crazy how quickly it happens. But all offseason, balance on offense. What are they trying to do? How much are they really going to throw the football? They have all these wide receivers. How much do they want to throw the football? And how much things change when J.K. Dobbins is no longer available? And you're like, all right, what are our running options? Is Lamar our best running option on any given play if we need to make 2 yards, make 3 yards? 33 passes, the distribution of the ball is still there. I never thought they wanted to throw the ball 50 times. I'm the guy that questioned that. I was trying to figure out what the balance would look like in a perfect attack. And more than that, and Sunday's a great example of that, lead late in the game, you get the ball back, you got to keep the ball, make sure they don't get the ball back. And they did that, right? Whether it's getting, I said to my wife, there's 2.5 minutes, 3 minutes left to go in the game. They need two first downs. Two first downs, you win the game. Can they do that? Can they do that on the road? And then the Gus Bus. I mean, Gus Bus is in the garage in the first half. You don't even know he's there. Then he comes back out. He doesn't look as big as he used to look. Doesn't look like the bus he was 5 years ago. Looks like a different kind of back. But certainly that availability in the second half to say, we got a lead. We're on the road. It's a two-score lead. You might get one score, but we're getting the ball back, and then you're not going to get the ball back. And That's how you close out a game on the that's where the running attack really becomes important, to close a game on the road in the division, and they did that.
Exactly. I mean, that's how you play football in 2023. You do not – we hear this all the time, and it was definitely true under a Greg Roman offense, but you don't really come out in the NFL and, quote, establish the run. That doesn't mean you don't run the ball at all. Let's be very clear about that. But it's really a league that's now set up, you know, when you look at the rules, when you look at how offenses are constructed, when you look how much quarterbacks are paid, when you look at just how everything works in the NFL in the modern era, you have to throw the ball. You do. But when you throw the ball to get a lead, what do you do in the second half then? You run to protect the lead. So that's really how it works. You look in the first half breakdown, Lamar Jackson threw 24 times. They ran 20 times. I mean, they threw the ball more than they ran. And in the second half, with the lead, you crank up the running game, and specifically how the Ravens were able to close that out with their 4-minute offense at the end, where they do run and they do pick up the couple first downs, so that Burrow and the Bengals, who had finally heated up on offense, did not get another opportunity. So that's how you want to see it. I mean, I don't say this to be anti-running game, but that's just how it works in the modern era. And what we saw on Sunday with the quick game, I mean, Lamar Jackson got the ball out so quickly in the first half, and he was in rhythm, which we did not see that last week. I mean, he had very little rhythm. This offense in general was very choppy. You know, other than, you know, they had the stretch in the third quarter. You know, there wasn't much to write home about. I mean, I flat out said I did not think Jackson played well in week one overall, and especially when you factor in the turnovers. But they came out with rhythm. The offensive line was good. Lamar Jackson made them look even better because he got the ball out and he made quick decisions. And I thought that's what they needed to do on Sunday. I thought they were going to have to play quick game, get the ball out, not let Hendrickson and Hubbard tee off on their offensive tackles and try to get Lamar in the pocket. So there was very little pressure on him over the course of the game. When there was pressure, Lamar does what Lamar does best, which is scramble and escape and make something out of nothing. And that's still going to be there, and that's not going to go away. What we have seen go away to this point is not quite as many designed runs for Lamar Jackson. And as we said, a more modern approach to this offense. So week one was choppy. It was choppy for a lot of teams around the league. We saw this with even some of the very best teams. Look at Kansas City on opening night and what they were dealing with, albeit without Travis Kelce. But to see what they look like in week two with no Ronnie Stanley, with no Tyler Linderbaum, I mean, give McCary and Sam Mustipher credit. They held up really well. That offensive line played an excellent football game. But Lamar Jackson getting the ball out as quickly as he did, which was by design, mind you, made them look even better. So it just – that's – I think what we saw Sunday, other than the injuries, other than – knowing that J.K. Dobbins isn't coming back, he's on IR, all that. So the running game does look different. It's going to be this timeshare between Edwards and Justice Hill, and we'll see if Melvin Gordon's sprinkled in at some point in time. He was up on Sunday, but clearly was not a factor because he didn't get a carry. But you know, this is what they had in mind. This what their offense looked like on Sunday. That was by design.
When I talked about wide receivers, though, right? Like all offseason, oh, we got all these wide four balls for most of these guys, and five guys getting three or four balls sounds like 25 completed passes, right? Like literally five for Aguilar, four for Flowers, five for Andrews, three for Beckham before he went out, three for Bateman. That's 24 of 33. You don't want 31 of 46 for Lamar, right? Like the more he passes, the worse. And he ran the ball 12 times, and I don't think you want him running the ball 12 times. And in a J.K. Dobbins world, maybe he wouldn't have run the ball 12 times. I don't want to see him run the ball 180 times this year. I don't.
Sure. No, I agree with that. I mean, I'm not as caught up in what the final numbers look like as much as what I saw over the course of 60 minutes, which was a very productive, very efficient offensive attack. And they threw the ball more than they ran in the first half. And with a lead, as should be the case, then you crank up the running game. You know, you throw to win in the NFL in this day and age, and you run to protect the win. You run to protect the lead in the second half. That's really how it works.
Especially on the road with the clock, right?
Yeah. I mean, as much as the old adage that you still hear, and look, I'm sure I've still said it at times, you know, that this notion of, oh, you have to establish the run. It's not really how most offenses work in this day and age. Doesn't mean you come out and throw it every single play either. I'm not endorsing that mindset, but it is a case of coming out, throwing on first down, picking up a good chunk of yardage, getting yourself in second and third and short. Then you run the ball, move the chains, and then you repeat that. You get yourself in position to have a lead. The Ravens did that. And then you get in the second half, you're protecting that lead. And even as the Bengals finally got going offensively, you know, they were one score behind. You know, they were one score behind. They were chasing points on the scoreboard. And you know, the Ravens just at that point, they played a very complimentary football game with getting their running game going then in the second half. And the defense forcing the Bengals to go to the length of the field, forcing them to sustain drives and picking up third downs. I mean, it was a very complimentary way of playing football. And let's face it, if not for the punt return TD, I mean, you know, this game, I'm not saying it turns into a complete blowout, but it's a game where, you know, the Ravens are in control and it's a two score, you know, at least a multi-score, you know, kind of football game throughout if it plays out that way. So again, I couldn't be more impressed with how Jackson and the offense operated, especially given some of the absences on that side of the ball.
Gus Bus back. I mean, we don't talk about Gus Edwards. We haven't talked much about him in the offseason. Talk about him more when Dobbins goes down. But a real, you know, a factor back when you need him to be. He's never not been good, right? Like, from the I look at Gus Edwards and say, what did he ever do wrong? He hasn't had big fumbles. Whenever he's called upon, you notice him. He finishes things. Very underappreciated Raven over the course of the body of his work.
Easily. Go look at his numbers. It's as simple as every single year, even last year, and last year was a little bit different because he was coming back from the serious knee injury in 21. So he wasn't the same guy last year as, you know, as what we had seen in previous years, but still every single year, 5+ yards per carry, five plus yards per carry, 5+ yards per carry. What I think each of his fully healthy seasons, right around 700 yards, 750 rushing yards per year. And that's never being the quote guy in the backfield, right? And we know Greg Roman didn't really believe in having a true feature back who's, and very few teams do that in the modern day. I mean, what the Ravens are going to be now, you know, maybe it would have been different if Dobbins had been healthy. He might have been more of the feature back who might have gotten 20 touches a game, but what we saw on Sunday is what I expect to see going forward. I think you're going to see Gus Edwards and Justice Hill share the workload. And you're going to see Edwards be the more physical in-between the tackles runner that he's been since midway through the 2018 season, when he really became the top running back when the Ravens shifted from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson. And we're going to see Justice Hill as that guy who's going to be more of a factor as a receiver out of the backfield, although, you know, didn't have big production in that regard on Sunday, but you know, he can run the ball as well. And we've seen Justice Hill, and I talked about him a lot over the course of the offseason during training camp and even in the spring. I think for what Todd Monken wants to do in early down situations, and when you're just talking about, you know, first and 10, second and 10, third, even third and 10, Justice Hill fits. Probably, you know, not probably, he does fit better what Todd Monken's looking for in a back in those situations. But that's not to say that Gus Edwards isn't going to continue to have a really important role in this offense on third and short situations at the goal line. Certainly in the second half, when you get into that period of time where you have a lead and you want to chew the clock and you get into a 4-minute offense the way they did late on Sunday, they complement each other well. And I don't think it's going to be one of those. You know, I think so many of us are fixated on fantasy football in 2023. And look, I'm in three different leagues. But, you know, so people have asked me, you know, since Dobbins went down, you know, what do you think the Ravens, you know, who should I pick up in fantasy, Justice Hill or Gus Edwards? And I said,
a different team.
Flip a coin. I think some weeks you want one guy and some weeks you want the other guys. And, you know, I think that'll be frustrating for fantasy football fans. But for the Ravens, it's not going to be dynamic. It's not, you're not going to send either of those guys to the Pro Bowl, but I think it'll work, especially with the strides that they've made with their passing game and, you know, the wide receiver talent that they have. I mean, Nelson Aguilar, big game, beautiful touchdown on third and five from Lamar to him that, was really the defining score for them in that ball game. But they had Mark Andrews back. We talked about it last week. The Ravens were unable to unlock the middle of the field last week. They had plenty of opportunities over the middle of the field that they succeeded with on Sunday. And Mark Andrews, for all the talk of the wide receivers, and look, we're going to see this vary. We saw it Zay Flowers in week one. Mark Andrews, a team high 8 targets on Sunday. As I've said, and as you, I think you've agreed with me as well, for all the talk about the wide receivers, until proven otherwise, Mark Andrews remains the true number one receiver for this Ravens offense. And it's not a knock on the wide receivers. It's just an acknowledgement of how great Mark Andrews is and how great that rapport he has with Lamar Jackson that is 5 years in the making.
That's why it was strange to see Likely get the first pass of the game. I'm like, look at this.
Yeah.
And the distribution of who he was throwing the football to. Munkin came in as this outside genius in college game, went back to the college game to refine himself and win a championship and come back. 2 weeks into this, even with the missing parts, right? I mean, no Dobbins, you know that going in. Now no Linderbaum, no Stanley. All of that played into my thought that they're going to struggle in Cincinnati. And again, I was more bullish on Cincinnati. I'm down on them, having watched them for 4 quarters. I'll give the Ravens their flowers and their Zay flowers for winning the football game. But the Bengals look to be in trouble. And I'll talk about this more during the week as well. Luke, I'm a ticket guy, right? I check ticket apps and see what the prices are. It really gives a gauge of a real stock market for interest. Ravens tickets for the last 5 years since the Wembley knee, on game day, you can get into a Ravens game for $15-$20 every week consistently, no matter who they play. Last week was no exception to that. Cincinnati was always a place where, like, the upper deck had 10,000 empty seats most of my lifetime. There was one point where when Carson Palmer was decent and they opened a season on a Sunday night where it was, like, really full and it was a real ticket. And that was during the era when Ray Lewis was here and every week was $200 to get in here. I went and all the Cincinnati, and I haven't been to Cincinnati since I got thrown out and I wasn't there in the playoff game last year, but I haven't been to Cincinnati in a couple years. But apparently this whiteout and the Joe Burrow and going to the Super Bowl, and I was at the Super Bowl in LA 2 years ago, that it's changed everything about the franchise there. And tickets were $200 to get in. There was no availability if you went on the ticket app to see how wound up Cincinnati is for the football team. In my lifetime, I've been going there 27 years. It's never, ever, ever been a tough ticket. It's been sold out once or twice in 27 years. And now all of a sudden, if you look on the app, it's $200 every week to get in Cincinnati. Everybody wants a ticket. It's all baked in that you're going to have a hell day going to Who Day and playing in the jungle and all that stuff. What a letdown for their community, right? I mean, that they're 0-2. They're the division favorite. The quarterback is on the bench at the end of the game trying to work his leg that you know is not right, and he hadn't really looked right. He moved around a little bit in the second quarter and stopped moving in the second half. The division itself, because the Steelers don't look like they're any good at all. We'll figure the Browns out. We'll have a chance to see both of those teams next couple of weeks. But when figuring out where the Ravens are, it's kind of like the Orioles. I measure them against the Yankees and the Red Sox. One of the reasons the Orioles are so good this year is the Yankees and Red Sox kind of got out of the way. They're not a factor. If the Bengals aren't a factor in this division, that makes life a lot different. And it makes life a lot different the next couple of weeks if you play without Linderbaum, you play without Stanley, you play without Beckham. Other guys are going to get hurt. We know that. But the gap between where the Ravens are and where the Bengals, we spent 8 months here thinking, Ravens are pretty good, but the Bengals have Joe Burrow and the Bengals the last couple of years, the Bengals just a little bit better maybe if we think in that way. We don't think that way anymore. 2 weeks into this, the punch in the jaw came for Cincinnati. That franchise is now teetering for a season right now after giving Burrow all this money. And he looks to me like he might be incapable of being Joe Burrow because he might not be upright the right way for a while. That injury doesn't feel like he's going to wake up on Wednesday and feel good about himself.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible. I mean, I think it's important for we talk so much about overreaction in week one. Week two, definitely you start to see what teams are going to look like. I think it's important to remember it's still a week-to-week league. I'm not burying the Cincinnati Bengals, and I'm not suggesting you are either. I mean, I'm not downplaying the fact that
I'm
how
saying
bad
you're in
they.
real trouble when you're 0-2 and you lose at home to the Ravens.
I mean, real trouble. I don't know if I'd say real trouble. There's definitely reason for concern. There's no question about that. But they were 0-2 last year, and we saw how it turned out. So I still am not
but
ready.
They're the
to,
only team in the history of the history to ever do that, to think it's going to happen again. 0-2 is trouble.
No, they're not the only team to do that. I mean, that's not true. But yeah, they have some concerns. I'm not sitting here and trying to take up for how the Bengals have played over the course of the first 2 weeks. I mean, they didn't have a pulse the first six quarters of the season, save for what, the punt return. But at the same time, it's a lot of talented football players on that team, and guys who have been to January and made a Super Bowl run. It is week three. You know, I mean, we're not out of September yet. Let's remember that it's a week to week league. So important to remember that early in the season. I mean, you know, look at how the Giants started in week one, just horrendous, awful in the first half of week two, and then they figure out a way to come back and win. And that doesn't mean the Giants are fine either. Let's be clear. Just showing that the league is crazy. We know that it's a week to week league. Yes, the Ravens absolutely have the advantage now and should be regarded as the favorite to win the division. There's no question about that. When you get a game in hand going to Cincinnati and winning, that absolutely. If you're going to ask me right now if I think the Ravens are going to win the division in late September, yeah, sure, after I had picked them to finish just behind the Bengals. But that said, that doesn't mean I think the Bengals are suddenly a 5-12 or a 6-11 operation, but they better get themselves right. And to your point, a calf injury for Joe Burrow, you know, he's not a guy that runs around. Of course, he's not Lamar Jackson. You know, he's not even early Ben Roethlisberger in terms of running around, but he is someone who has some mobility when he's healthy and can move around in the pocket, extend plays, you know, make plays, you know, not so much with his legs to take off and run, but to move around and allow his guys to shake free and force a defense to try to plaster a wide receivers. If he can't do that and he just has to stand in the pocket, it does limit them much more. So they're definitely, again, I'm not ready to bury them. I'm not ready to say that they're doomed by any stretch of the imagination. But, boy, you start 0-2 in the division, you have created an uphill climb for yourself to one, you know, just get out of the hole, and two, be in a position where you're going to be watching the scoreboard and hoping the Ravens slip up here. So, you know, we'll see how it plays out again. 2 weeks in. I mean, this season is very, very young. And the Ravens, as well as they played in week two, you know, we know that they have a couple more AFC North road games coming up here over the next 3 weeks. So not going to get easier in that regard. But, boy, the Ravens absolutely fired the first punch. And yeah, they didn't knock out the Bengals. Again, I'm not ready to say that, but they knocked them down. There's no question about that, and we'll see how Cincinnati gets off the mat here over the next few weeks.
All right, Luke's going to be watching Oriole baseball from the road, hanging out in Owings Mills this week. He'll be at the ballpark on Sunday as the Indianapolis Colts come to town. We are celebrating 25 years of WNST magic here. Our stories of glory, and time will not dim the glory of your deeds, including all of our charity work, our amazing Purple Live shows at the Barn. We're going to be featuring a lot of that work this week, so be checking it out on social media as things calm down a little bit here now that the Tampa series is over. We exhale. Playoff invoices are coming for Orioles tickets. Look out for that as well. All of our Maryland Crab Cake Tour Stops, brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have the Raven scratch-offs now, the black cars, the $2 tickets. We had a lucky winner at Fadley's last week. We had a great visit with Dr. Anthony Jenkins and Larry Stewart from Coppin State. Hope you're enjoying that, as well as Damie Hahn talking some oysters in September, bringing me some fried oysters as well down at Fadley's. That was delicious. We will be at Coco's on Thursday doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I'll be giving away these Raven scratch-offs. Our friends at Window Nation, I have my Window Nation shirt on, 866-90-NATION. You buy two, you get two free. I'll be telling you more about that, as well as our friends at Jiffy Lube, our newest sponsor for the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. Putting dates together, been very slow in putting October dates together because of this playoff thing. I went to bed Saturday night thinking, oh my God, they're a Friday night, but thinking, my God, they might have to play 2 weeks from now. Then now they might get a couple of days off. October is on hiatus. for all things orange Kool-Aid. So Orioles making us proud and having some fun over the weekend as well with the Adam Jones night. I have a dear Adam Jones letter up, have a dear Steve Bisciotti letter up, a dear John Harbaugh letter up, and a lot of magic around here this week as we're up a little later watching some Central Time baseball in Houston where I still think they're cheating. I'm Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.